I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to this very special edition of the Empire Podcast. Star Wars The Last Jedi, the biggest film of 2017, is out this week. If you're listening to it in the week commencing April 9th, that is. If not, ignore me completely. It's out this week on DVD and Blu-ray, and so I thought you might enjoy this interview with two of the film's key figures, the director, Rian Johnson, and The Last Jedi himself, Mark Hamill, a.k.a. Luke Frickin' Skywalker. Now, this interview isn't as lengthy as other Empire specials, but it is a lot of fun. And if you're looking for an interview that delves deep into The Last Jedi, well, this isn't that interview either. If you do want that, our Last Jedi spoiler special features Rian Johnson digging deep into the film, and that's available for you to listen to now. All you have to do is search for it. What this does, hopefully, is give you a sense of the two men and their dynamic together. They clearly enjoy each other's company. And you know what? I hope you do too. Some more quick notes to set things into some sort of context before we begin. This interview took place in a London hotel room, not the pod booth, the morning after the Empire Awards back in March, where Rian was named Best Director, Star Wars won Best Film, and Mark received the Empire Icon Award, which he marked with a sweet but surprisingly short speech. I say short because, well, as you're about to hear, and I mean this in the best possible way, you don't interview Mark Hamill, you hang on for dear life. The man is a force of nature. Get it? Force of nature. So he talks about receiving the Icon Award and a lot more besides. So here we are, Mark Hamill and Rian Johnson, but let's face it, mostly Mark Hamill, talking about when they first met, what it's like to be an icon, whether they get recognised in public, their feelings on Donald Trump, the Beatles, and much, much more. It's time to take your first steps into a larger world. Oh, and unlike most Empire Podcast interviews, this one just starts. Again, you don't interview Mark Hamill. He happens to you. And I had an absolute blast. Hope you do too. Here you go. Enjoy.
Acting!
I'm acting! That was John Lovitz.
It was. He was so good.
You get Saturday Night Live here?
No.
Well,
no.
You see it, you just don't get it.
Okay.
There you go.
I love that joke.
So good.
Steve Allen did that. He would answer questions to the audience. I read books. Mr. Allen, I was just wondering if they get your program in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Well, they see it, but they don't get it. I thought, that's so fast.
That's good.
I was wondering if your lovely wife, Jane, your son, Steve Jr., are in the audience tonight. Why? Are you planning on burglarizing my apartment? You can turn around a question and make it mean something completely different.
Genius. Is that what you're going to do today?
I'm not that talented. I'm just quoting witty people. I'm not actually witty myself.
Is that what you've done throughout the whole of your career? You've just quoted witty people.
Yeah, exactly. That's what was so intimidating about last night. I didn't have any writers. I didn't look up the description of what icon meant until that morning.
Oh, really?
And I thought, oh, my God. I mean, I won't tell you what it said, but the example was Elvis Presley. And I can assure you, Chris, I'm no Elvis Presley.
I'll take issue with that. I'll argue with that.
Rian, you can speak for Mark. What's iconic about this man sitting to your left?
Everything is iconic about this man.
About Luke.
That's the thing. I mean, what Daisy said is really true, though. I mean, it's intimidating. The first time I sat down and talked, I came over to your house and we sat down and talked. I don't know if you could tell, I was petrified.
Really?
Absolutely.
No.
But
we
then
watched Sergeant Bilko.
That's
together.
The thing. When I first sat down, by the end of like our 4 hours together, I just felt like I was hanging out with a fellow.
Because we got
geek.
To the point in the conversation. So anyway, you know, that wind up feeling.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I'm still having fun. And we were out in the grown up room, like the living room.
Yeah.
And I thought, I should bring them into the room where all the toys and the
man cave.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And he'd never seen Sergeant Bilko. It was one of my favorite classic 50s.
Well, he saw, but he didn't get it.
That was great. And I'll tell you one thing where I thought, now I really bonded with this guy. Because after about an hour or so, I said, I have to tell you about coming back to this thing.
Yeah.
I'm terrified. I'm so scared. And you know what he said? Me too. And I thought, he didn't have to say that. Even if he felt that way, you know, he might not want to reveal that part of him.
Yeah.
But the fact that he was that frank, I thought, see, now this is a guy I can relate to.
So that was a four-hour first conversation. Was it scheduled for 4 hours, or no, was it the quick?
I don't even remember it being 4 hours. It just seemed like it, you know, the time just flew by.
It was a great first date.
Yeah. There you go.
And now we're an old married couple.
Yeah. Predicting each other's reactions. That's true. Yeah. These are all my anecdotes.
Bickering over the Bilko box sets.
Yeah.
I saw it first, says Mark. No, Ryan, that's mine.
You know, that really surprised me when I first came to England. Because Bilko had sort of fallen out of favor. They prefer color, you know, Bewitched and yeah. Modern series, because black and white doesn't score as well in the ratings. And it's such a classic series. It wasn't running in Los Angeles. It was running at 11:30 at night in San Francisco. And I was reminded how good they were. When I came to England, there on BBC Two or whatever, they had every week it would sign off with an episode.
Yeah.
Sergeant Bilko.
Yeah.
And I thought, why is this so popular? Everybody loved it. And I said, oh, of course, because it's like the ultimate stereotype of an American. Brash, money hungry, loud mouth, no devotion to country, only for self-aggrandizement. It's like a parody of the ugly American. Plus, it's Phil Silvers, and he's genius. You know.
Was it Phil Silvers first you were watching? I thought it was the Steve Martin film.
No,
Steve Martin one's so superior. It's far, far better. You should check it out, Mark, if you haven't seen
Mark's
it.
Okay.
Well, you know, I was just going to say that. Neil Simon, when he had a partner, Terry Ryan, cut his teeth selling scripts to Bilko. He wrote four or five of them before he went solo and delegated to Terry Ryan to obscurity.
now we have Bilko running the country. I said it, not you.
So, yeah, I know. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Oh, no, yeah, I always compared it to P.T. Barnum, but P.T. Barnum was a benign con man.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, okay, no, we won't go any further.
I was going to say, because you have not been backwards in coming forward about Donald Trump over the last few months.
No, but listen, I'm in the escapism business, and I keep my opinions to social media where you can ignore or unfollow me. I don't go on television about it or do it in interviews, because I agree. People say, you stick to acting. Who cares what you think? I said, well, if I vote, I'm a voter, so I get an opinion. Mm-hmm. If you're a truck driver and you vote, I don't say, I don't want to hear your opinion. Just stick to truck driving. Everybody gets to, as long as you vote. It really bugs me, people that don't vote. In Australia, you get like the equivalent of a parking ticket if you don't vote. The upshot is like more than 93% of the population votes because they don't want to pay that $20, $30 parking ticket. Yeah. And plus they put we should have our election day on Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely, we
because
should.
Because people say, well, I'm at work, or I have to pick up my kids. They have excuses since it's on a Tuesday.
Yeah. They should also maybe attach a prize to it.
A jet ski.
Yeah. You know, I think or if you can't afford a jet ski, just a picture of a jet ski. That's the that's the best thing. Mark, you didn't win the picture of a jet ski last night. Your speech wasn't as long as I was hoping it would be.
Really? Because the thing is, you lose track of time when you're up there. And when I sat down, I thought, you know, my point was, I had threads of thought that I abandoned. For instance, I said we didn't have Empire when I was a kid. We did have Famous Monsters.
Yeah.
But both magazines inspire future filmmakers and actors and to follow their dreams. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was going to say the fact that the black and white King Kong changed my life.
Yeah.
When I realized there's somebody that goes to work and their job is to make dinosaurs come to life. You know, I want that job. I mean, I don't know if I could do it, but I know, I mean, I watched these documentaries on the Walt Disney program where they would, the making of Darby O'Gill and the Little People or whatever, and you'd see the carpenter. Yeah, I love that movie too, but
the Banshee.
Oh my God.
The Banshee.
Every Disney film has a moment that makes little kids pee their pants.
Petrified.
I know. That was absolutely terrifying. When I saw it. But my point is, you saw, you know, Disney would pull back the curtain and you'd see the carpenters and the camera crew and the wardrobe people. So I thought that gave me hope, because I thought, I don't know if I have the talent to succeed, but you know, I could be do you know, one of the ancillary jobs. Yeah. I'm not a bad cook. I could cater the film. I don't have to be in the show. I want to be near the show, and it's magazines like in your case, Empire, that are inspiring young people. Famous Monsters that inspired me. I remember a light bulb went off when I was 4 or 5. I saw Clarence Nash recording a Donald Duck cartoon. Now, I probably, if I rationalize it, well, of course, humans yeah. do the voices. But it never occurred to me, because it, you know, emerges fully blown with the music and it's all done. And I thought, again, a grown-up goes to work and his job, he gets a paycheck for talking like Donald Duck. And I filed that away, because I didn't know anybody in show business. My parents didn't know anybody in show, but we didn't know anybody who knew anybody in show business. It was so far away and distant.
Yeah.
But again, see, that was sort of the thread I wanted to get to last night. But, you know, I didn't write out a speech, you know, and I was going to start questioning, you know, what is an icon? How did I get here? Over a mountain of merchandising. That's a good start.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
You know, I'm an electric toothbrush. I'm a sleeping bag. I'm a pair of underoos. I'm an army of action figures. But then again, you know, I'm not a stand-up comic. I want to be respectful.
Yeah.
It's hard in these situations, because again, I thought, I said, is Empire really sure that I deserve this? And then I looked up the actual dictionary description. I said, they're out of their minds. it was described as someone or something that is revered or idolized. Now, again, it's probably Luke that they're thinking of, but I don't. As even Stephen said something that I was going to say, which was, I don't feel like a legend.
Yeah.
What does a legend feel like? I don't feel like an icon, but I'm glad to know somebody thinks that.
Well, I presume an icon gets a better table in a restaurant than.
Listen, you never get recognized where it could help you. Like if you're 20 minutes till curtain and you want to get a table, I could stand in the position holding the lightsaber and hum John Williams' theme. And people will go, and you are. You know when you get recognized? When you're right to the air, to your gate at the airport, and you're running, and somebody wants a selfie. That's when you get recognized.
Ryan, what about yourself? Directors tend to hide in the background, but you could recognize.
Oh, yeah, it's so nice. No one knows directors. It's so nice. We get just to.
Wait till they see the documentary. He's all over the director and the Jedi. Over, he even gave himself top billing, the director and the Jedi. And the,
oh, yeah, and the Jedi.
And Jedi. And the Jedi.
No, it's. I mean, I only get the pleasant stuff, which is mostly, like, if anyone recognizes me, the likelihood is that they're either like a big Star Wars fan now, or like a film student, you know, somebody who is genuinely interested in movies. And so, I get just kind of the pleasant side of it, and I get so little of it that it's, I can't imagine, you know, it's a very different thing from what any actor, and especially someone like Mark, gets. Mm. You know?
But you don't really value your anonymity until it's gone, you know? But it's funny. I remember when I was 12, I saw Hard Day's Night. But aside from loving their music, the self-deprecatory humor, they were so relatable. And I thought, oh, wow, wouldn't that be great to have girls chasing you down the street? It's just a nonstop fantasy of stardom. Fast forward, because I've seen this movie. It's, to me, someone called it the Citizen Kane of rock and roll movies.
It really is.
And I fully agree. But my daughter was turning, she had a birthday when we were in London. And I said, what do you want to do for your birthday? She said, well, Hard Day's Night's playing in the theater. I'd love to see it on a big screen. I said, say no more. I hadn't seen it in 5 or 6 years. And I went, and I saw it from a completely different perspective.
Interesting.
It was like a horror film. They're completely trapped.
Interesting.
They go from a car to a train to another car to a hotel room to the radio station, back to the car. That's when they burst out onto the soccer field because they feel liberated and they get round it, or they break away to go to the nightclub.
Yeah.
And their manager's saying, no, you got to come back and answer the fan mail. I just saw it in a completely different way.
Interesting.
Than I did when I was a kid.
Yeah,
because one of the things that's bothersome to me is that we're trapped in this multi-million-dollar memorabilia market where now I can't tell the difference between fans and dealers. And they're at the airports. If we go out to a movie, they're there. Yeah. You know, it makes you want to be a recluse because I love the fans. And I know that the dealers take advantage of them by jacking up the prices and putting them on eBay. One thing that's really telling, you'll say, how about a selfie? The real fan will go, oh, I'd love it. You know, if they have a poster.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Another person with a poster would say, nah, I'd prefer your name on the poster. And don't put it to anyone because it's going to be a gift and I don't know who I want to give it to. Yeah. How about best wishes to eBay? Forcefully yours, Mark Hamill. But again, I mean, I joke about it, but it really is harsh on me because now we go to these events and there's all these people and I don't sign in public anymore. I mean, unless, like, at the supermarket or, you know, somebody just happens upon me, of course I'll do that. But when there's a big crowd of people, I'm assuming most of them are dealers. And it breaks my heart because I do love the fans, but I'm not that fond of the dealers.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's an interesting world that I've seen people go through the trunks of their car. And they will have pictures of everybody.
I had no idea until I did
I've seen guys that have shopping carts and they'll go, okay, Tom Cruise, Tom Hiddleston, here's Mark Hamill. And that's their job. And you can't really fault them. I mean, it's like paparazzi. Some of those guys make six, seven figures by doing nothing but using telephoto lens and getting celebrities on film. But so you get it. I mean, it's just just a reality that you have to deal with.
You mentioned right back at the beginning of the interview the Mark Hamill man cave. And Ryan, I wanted to get from your perspective what that man cave is like. Can you describe what the Mark Hamill man cave is like?
It's a cave of wonders. It's a magical place.
Did it show you your inner self?
It really did. It was like imagine like the cave in Empire, except the magic tree in Empire, except goodness and happiness and geekdom.
Puppets.
It's so lovely.
Monster model kids.
You know what it actually reminded me of is Guillermo's Bleak House. It's like a mini version of that.
I've only seen photographs, but that's wonderful, amazing.
It's so cool, man. But it's like a little mini shrine to everything that Mark loves, and it just kind of shows you the inside of Mark's head in a very cool way that makes you instantly
love him. A lot
of
these things were things that I wanted as a kid, but we just didn't have the money for it, you know. So when I got a little money, I said, I am going to buy the Beatles Flip Your Wig game just because I can. When I was that age, I thought, who would play with that? It's so stupid. I was totally about the music.
Right,
I didn't buy any of the memorabilia or anything. And the minute they broke up, all those things had an appeal to me that they didn't at the time.
Yeah.
And I remember Nathan came back. My older son came back from his sleepover when I was first or second grade. He sort of seemed sort of troubled about something, and I said, well, you didn't have any? He goes, no, it was okay. And I said, well, what's bothering you? He goes, Josh's dad doesn't have any toys.
No.
I said, Josh's dad is a lawyer. Why would he, you know, because he lives in a house where he hears dialogue like, no, this is dad's Batmobile. See, mom put D with his fingernail polish. Go find the Batmobile with G for Griffin or N for Nathan. And he was just upset that his friend's father, when you went into his man cave, it looked like a grown-up's lived there, not like an arrested 12-year-old.
What is the Beatles? What's the game? What's the game?
The Beatles Flip Your Wig game.
Flip Your Wig game.
Yeah.
I've never heard of this one. For a long time, I collect.
I don't collect so much anymore, but I was collecting odd board games. You know, the Eddie Cantor's Tell It to the Judge. I loved games that were connected with celebrities. And or games based on TV shows.
Yeah,
it didn't matter if I didn't like the TV show.
Yeah.
If it was, you know, the I Dream of Jeannie board game. I'd buy it. But we went through a phase where I was sort of like buying silly things, and then your priorities shift. You know, the kids have to go to private school, they have to get braces, and you go, what am I spending $700 on a 10-set comic book? I stopped cold turkey collecting comic books years ago.
Yeah. Ryan, is there a Ryan Johnson man cave? If so, what does it look like? What's in there?
Oh, it's not as cool as Mark's. I have an office that I just keep all my stuff in. The closest thing to what you're talking about.
Figures.
What's that? No, I don't. I have the Yoda figure that Frank signed for me, and that's it.
But the figure of you and Rom.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't have that.
Oh, you don't?
Rom has that. Oh. Yeah, I don't have room for
it. Tell him what it is in his office in London.
I like the guys at Pinewood 3D printed Rom and I as stormtroopers with our helmets off. And it's eerily like...
Oh, it looks just like them.
It's very, very strange, yeah. But no, my version of your getting the old board games, I had these old computer games that I loved growing up. The Infocom games, which were the text adventures like Zork. And I went on eBay and I collected all 30 of them, like the old versions of them. And so that's like my one.
Nathan did that with his old Nintendo games. What killed me was on one disc, there was untold number of games. I said, I paid $49.95 for each one of those. Now you've got 40 on one disc. But it's funny to see your kids go through. You know you're really getting old when you have children that experience second childhoods. Because they gave up video games at one point, you know, when they were like in junior high school, it's not cool anymore. Then they got into, you know, their early 20s and they started getting nostalgic for Sky Kid.
You see.
And the Jaws game. So. And to hear all those tunes again, because I walk by the room and you hear all those, you know, the tunes that are on an endless loop.
Sure,
Amazing. Gents, I could talk to you all day. And Mark, I might want to invite you back on for a special Empire Podcast Beatles special.
Because
I could talk to you all day about the Beatles. So,
me too.
But I will have to wrap it up. Ryan, Mark, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for having us.
Okay, that's it from Mark Hamill and Ryan Johnson, and that's it from this very special edition of the Empire Podcast. If you do want more from that duo, and why wouldn't you, pick up the next issue of Empire on sale April 19th. And if you want more from the Empire Podcast, the regular pod is out every Friday, and we have a whole slew of specials this week, including a Ready Player One supporter special with screenwriter Ernest Cline, and a Quiet Place spoiler special with writer-director-star John Krasinski. Oh, and a new episode of The Ranking, which is our new monthly show in which we rank a filmmaker or franchise, will be out this week as well, and that will be dedicated to the great Brian De Palma. But again, if you're not listening to this week, ignore what I just said, but still, please do listen to those podcasts. And yes, we will be doing an Avengers Infinity War spoiler special. And you know what? Maybe even more than one. Maybe. Keep them peeled. And that is it for me. I have been Chris Hewitt. Thank you for listening. And as Luke Skywalker might say, engage. Bye.